And this was the scene outside Westminster Abbey in London earlier today. The bells pealed, the huge crowd cheered and waved Union Jacks as millions and millions and millions of TV viewers around the world watched the royal marriage of Prince William and Kate Middleton.
Before the royal wedding, which included extravagant pageantry, horse-drawn carriages, flags, and the royal guard, Prince William joked with his father-in-law, "We were supposed to have a small family affair."
But in the end, is anything for the royals small? Because it was a storybook wedding fit for a prince and princess. And then they lived happily ever after. At least that's how the story is supposed to go.
But for many people, finding the perfect partner and having the storybook wedding doesn't always happen according to plan. Which brings us to our Love Letters segment, an occasional feature here on Radio Boston with Meredith Goldstein, author of the Love Letters column for the Boston Globe. And Meredith, good to have you back.
Nice to be here.
So this week's letter comes from a 25-year-old woman looking for a long-term love, not finding it, and wondering if something's wrong
with
her.
Yes, she actually says that she's completely happy with her life. She loves her job. She's 25. She's got great friends. And then she says, "Am I broken because I haven't found a mate?" And boy, I wish all those people in London would be screaming like that for her, just now, for being an accomplished young woman without a suitor.
Right. And in fact, in the letter, she actually has had a few serious relationships and found love, but has still not found the one. So what was your advice?
Well, my advice was, she actually said to me, you know, "Do I need to see a therapist because of this?" And my thought was, you know, no, actually. Being 25, single, having a few failed relationships under your belt, and enjoying your life is exactly where you should be. And even if you were 30 or 33 or 35, I'd probably say the same thing. You know, there's a growing number of women out there who are successful, young, finding themselves. And it actually surprises me that there are still so many women who write into me saying, you know, "Am I doing something wrong because I haven't met the one?" Mm. And, you know, it's when a wave of your friends gets married, you ask the question of yourself.
Well, let's bring another voice into the conversation. Michelle Cove is author of Seeking Happily Ever After, Navigating the Ups and Downs of Being Single Without Losing Your Mind and Finding Lasting Love Along the Way. She's also director and producer of a documentary by the same title. And Michelle, welcome.
Thank you.
So before we talk about some of the themes in your documentary, which have a lot of relevance to this discussion, what's your advice to this letter writer that Meredith was just referring to?
I agree with Meredith. I think that there's such a tremendous amount of pressure to find someone still before the age of 30 and settle down and live the happily ever after. And what we're seeing is there's 6 million 30-something women alone who are single. You know, times are definitely changing, but that pressure is not changing for women. There's still that pressure to find him.
6 million 30-something women who are single,
yep.
Right? And according to your documentary, that number is rising, right? It continues to rise.
It is absolutely rising.
And you know, there's so much media coverage about these unhappy women who are walking around 30-something and miserable, but, you know, you spoke to many of these women, and is that what you actually found? Are these 30-something women miserable because they're single?
Mm. No, there's definitely this media perception of the desperate woman, and I think shows like The Bachelor, where we see them in the hot tub crying
right.
with a bottle of booze saying, right. "When am I going to find him?"
Fighting with other women.
Exactly. Yeah, there's definitely moments of loneliness and "When am I going to find him?" And there's still a lot of pressure, but these are also pretty accomplished women like this woman who wrote in who are doing a hell of a lot in their lives.
You know, one thing that occurred to me about this letter, this 25-year-old, you know, I think when you're single, you watch TV, speaking of media, and you see these single characters who go on 4 dates a week. You know, Sex and the City did a whole lot, you know, in the eyes of the feminist community about saying you can be in your late 30s and not be a failure if you're not married. But these characters were dating a new man every episode. And I think that changes our perception of how we're living our own lives. Why don't I have 50 boyfriends if I'm single?
Absolutely. And the other thing that, you know, surprised me was that moms are still the number one source of pressure, according to these women, in spite of the fact that many of these women came up through women's liberation, told their daughters to wait, you can have it all, take your time. And the moment these women hit 30.
And you had some nice examples in this clip, where in this documentary that you did, where some of the people who you interviewed are pretty much say that. Their mothers are like, you know, you're not normal. When are you going to get a date? Or, you know, when are you going to get a husband? When are you going to get a full-time partner, right?
Exactly. The same women who said, you know, take your time, are the ones who say, "Where's my grandbaby?" So there's this political idea and then this personal, "I want my grandchildren."
Huh. Well, let me play a clip from Seeking Happily Ever After. This is Garland Waller. She's a professor of television at BU.
The moment a girl is born, at least in our American culture, she is taught to want that dream of riding off into the sunset with Prince Charming. And that's sort of a crime, because I don't think we're helping our young women find the center that will make them strong and happy forever.
Listeners, what do you make of this? Is the idea of a fairy tale wedding just that, a fairy tale? Do you still dream of finding that perfect mate? Or are you 30-something and single by choice? And if so, what's the problem with that? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm here with Meredith Goldstein, columnist of Love Letters in the Boston Globe, and Michelle Cove. She's the author of Seeking Happily Ever After. Meredith, in your film, you set up this idea of single by choice, and I just put out the question, what's wrong with that? What's your view of that?
So this was actually one of the biggest disagreements between my producer and I. You know, is it single by choice or is it single by happenstance? She would absolutely say single by choice. You know, she's somebody who never wanted to marry, still doesn't, has been proposed to about 7 times, could care less. Most of the women that I met who, you know, we met on the streets of the country said that they do want to find somebody. You know, they don't want to be alone. But what's different is that they no longer have to settle because of their situation of being, you know, there are more financially independent women who no longer have to settle just for the sake of settling. So That's what's new.
Is that the main reason why more and more women are staying single so much longer, because of financial independence? This is one of the points that comes out in the film, right?
Yeah, I think it's huge, because it used to be you had to marry someone just to pay your bills and make life happen. And without that, you know, we can take longer to make sure we find someone who's actually a good partner for us.
Now, you interview a lot of women, and you follow one Bostonian, a woman named Jackie, who is single. She goes through all kinds of efforts to find the one. She does rush dating, online dating, group dating. And I have to say, just about every encounter she has is excruciating. It's painful.
For all of us.
Dating is always excruciating.
Oh, my God. What this poor woman goes through is just terrible. And Meredith, I just wanted to get you to sort of talk about the pressure facing folks like that.
Dating is awful. I mean, there are few people who really enjoy first dates, especially when they're blind dates. And you know, once you leave that cocoon of, let's say, a college or a high school where you're forced to interact with people your own age, it's hard to get to know people, and many people's jobs are isolated. So, yeah, when you do watch someone take a journey through internet dating and speed dating, especially when they seem to be on a deadline and putting pressure on themselves, it's hard to keep a light attitude about it. And, you know, I've certainly advised readers when they are feeling that dating fatigue to just take a break, because you're not doing anybody any favors, and you're certainly not showing your best self if you're saying, oh, gosh, in 3 more hours, I can just go home and watch TV. Please, please.
All right, let's get a couple of callers in who are already waiting on our lines. Jill is calling from Lynn. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
You're on the air. What's on your mind?
I'm actually 50 and single by choice.
Yay,
I
Jill.
Came close once, but finally decided I'm happier on my own. I have been on a lot of horrible first dates. I've had some record-breaking dates.
Well, Jill, tell us why. I mean, when you say you're single by choice and happy, what makes you happy about that situation?
I have a very good job, and I have a lot of friends, and I wouldn't have time for all the friends and work I do if I were married and had somebody expecting me to devote my attention just to this one relationship. Instead, I've got this whole community that supports me and is wonderful and that I'm able to be there for.
Well, Jill, it sounds wonderful. I want to ask you this, though, because this is a theme that came up in Meredith's film, and that is, do you feel pressure to go in a different direction? That is, to seek that.
Yeah.
So even at 50, well, that's interesting, because I tend to think that this pressure is really on women in their early 30s who are thinking about having children, but you're saying that's not age specific?
I've transitioned from, where are my grandchildren, to, but you'll be old and all alone and no one will be there for you.
Pretty common.
Yeah, right. Well, Jill, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. Good luck to you. Let's go to Margaret, who's calling from South Boston. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. You're on the air.
Okay, so so far, this program seems to be focusing on women looking for husbands. I just wanted to point out that not only is it not age-specific, but it's not heterosexual-specific, because I'm 37 and happily engaged, but I have noticed since my partner and I have become engaged, a lot of our friends seem to be commenting on the pressure that they feel to hurry up and find somebody to marry. So it's something that also happens in the homosexual community.
Well, in fact, Meredith, the letter, right, is from she is heterosexual, or
yes, but she has had several relationships with women, and seems to be, you know, veering in that direction. And you know, that was my other point to her is, you know, you're just exploring this new community. How can you possibly expect to have all the answers right now? But, you know, I think for some people who read this letter, you know, on Boston.com comments, they were actually relieved to hear that this isn't gender specific, and it's certainly not just about heterosexual couples. You know, I think we probably in our minds limit it to that, but it's not. I mean, here was a woman who had dated men and women and said, I'm still feeling pressure.
Mm. Michelle, in your book and movie, you also spoke with quite a few men. What was the take there?
Well, I was pretty surprised. I definitely went into this project with my own biases and thinking that men in their 30s sort of had it all. They were, you know, bachelors who weren't getting any pressure, and they were so lucky and nobody assumed anything was wrong with them. And I think because it was the first time that I really asked them for their thoughts without jumping in and telling them how they should think or, you know, what was wrong with what they said, I really just opened with a list in mind. And I was surprised by the amount of pressure that they also said that they faced, that there were definitely...
Yeah. And I think women, you know, in their 30s, I've heard a lot of them say, well, I'm going to go out with a guy, he's 39, never been married. The next question is, what's wrong with him?
Yeah, I think...
what's wrong with him?
That's right.
He's a real catch until his late 30s, and then it's what was he doing wrong? You
That's
know?
Right. And their friends are marrying off, and they're afraid of being, you know, the only one. They're certainly getting it from their mothers,
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah.
And I felt much more compassionate, I have to say, at the end of the project for their own experience.
Now, tell us what happened to Jackie. This is the Boston woman who features very prominently in your film, who went through this torture of dating, and she seemed ambivalent about this need to find a guy. She was doing her best. What happened to her?
Okay, well, spoiler alert, but she
spoiler
does,
alert. Yeah, okay.
She does find someone, and she finds someone, I think, in part going through this process and having to basically have forced therapy with having a camera in your face saying, how do you feel every 5 seconds? And, you know, taking stock of her life and what she wanted. And she found someone outside of this project who she came to, you know, through a work situation, as is more and more common these days.
Right.
Let's try to get one more call. And let's go to Christina, who's calling from Natick. Hi, Christina. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I was saying that I was happy being single for a while. I was content. Just like the other caller said, I had my friends, I had my family, I have my career, I have lots of hobbies and activities, but now I'm starting to get bummed out.
And how old are you?
I'm 34.
Yeah.
The single guys out there, hit me up.
Well, Christina, here, we've got Meredith Goldstein here. She can give you all kinds of advice. That's
right.
Her business. What do you want to say to Christina? She's bummed out. She's tired.
It is a bummer. And yeah. I think no matter how big our community, and so many women, especially in cities, have great communities, whether it's family, friends, we still sometimes want to curl up with somebody and watch TV, and maybe not a cat or a dog. So you're allowed to be bummed out. You just keep dating. You keep moving ahead. And you remember that every day lots of people break up. So everybody's back on the market.
All right.
There are always new suitors.
Christina, thanks so much for your call. Appreciate it. And many thanks to my guests, Meredith Goldstein, author of the Love Letters column for the Boston Globe, and Michelle Cove. She's the author of Seeking Happily Ever After, Navigating the Ups and Downs of Being Single Without Losing Your Mind and Finding Lasting Love Along the Way. She's also director and producer of a documentary by the same name. For more information on where to see the film, visit our website, radioboston.org.
So will you join me in toasting the royal couple?
The royal couple.
No, that's not a toast from Buckingham Palace this morning. Rather, it was made this afternoon at the Old State House by the British Consulate General to New England, Phil Budden.
Bostonians filed through the historic building for hours, signing an official wedding register to be delivered to the royal couple themselves. And Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea just returned from the celebration, and he's no doubt full of crumpets and clotted cream. Hello, Adam, and welcome.
Actually, Dunkin' Donuts provided some heart-shaped jelly donuts.
We actually heard about
this. Different type.
Struck me as very appropriate.
Absolutely.
Well, Adam, it does seem to me that the Old State House, though, might be a pretty inappropriate place to celebrate the monarchy.
I think I know where you're going with that, Magna. So let me go ahead and play you an exchange that I had with Mr. Consulate General himself.
I have to ask, any irony inherent in celebrating the royal family and at the site of the Boston Massacre, the seat of the revolution in the North?
Boston is well known for its role in the revolution and really led that. But the room we're standing in at the moment was the room where the royal governors used to run Massachusetts. So for 75 years after this old state house was built, this was the room where the royal governors would sit with their council, where they would defend Massachusetts against New France, where they would trade with the rest of the British Empire. So actually, we think there's both sides of the stories. Boston was a key part of the Revolution, but Boston was also a key part of the British-American Atlantic world.
The inner John Adams in me says, I think not.
Well, of course, he's not wrong. In fact, we can see the British legacy on the old state house itself, statues of the lion and the unicorn. Right, Adam? These are emblems of the British monarchy?
They sure are, but it's worth mentioning that those are not the original statues. The originals were torn down in 1776 and burned in the street. But that notwithstanding, you're correct, absolutely, Anthony. I talked with Brian LeMay, who is the director of the Bostonian Society, which is the nonprofit that runs the museum at the old state house and takes care of it and all that. And he said that today is just a really good day for us to remember our common heritage with the Brits.
It's part of the history of Boston. Americans were Britons for a good number of years. And the ideas that formed the foundations of the American government, freedom of assembly and freedom from search and seizure, issues that came to a head here in Boston before they really were written down in Philadelphia, these issues actually have a connection to ideas that were sparked by the Enlightenment in Britain. So there is a continuity between the British tradition and the American tradition. It's just that here in Boston, at a certain point in time, things came to a head.
That is one way of putting it.
Indeed,
isn't it?
Indeed. Let me leave you two with one fun fact, though, that I learned today, because when I was talking to Mr. LeMay, we were standing right next to the balcony where they read the Declaration of Independence to the people of Massachusetts from the balcony from the old state house. I always assumed that there was like a door that would go out to the balcony. There's not. You have to walk through. You have to like step through the window. Which struck me as particularly funny because I was reading this morning that the Queen, when she was doing her tour, her bicentennial tour of the United States in 1976, actually addressed the people of Boston from that balcony.
Did she step through the window?
They showed me this kind of dainty little step stool that they gave her. It was very queenly.
That's Radio Boston's Adam Ragusa giving us the report from the royal wedding situation in Boston. Thanks, Adam.
Good. Sure. Maybe Kate Middleton will get her own little step stool at some point.
Okay, let's hope. Next week on Radio Boston, retiring federal district court judge Nancy Gertner and Governor Deval Patrick. That's next week on Radio Boston.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com.
Our show is produced by Adam Ragusa, Jessica Alpert, and Dan Mawsey, and Jason Breslow. Our interns are Anna Pinkert and Amory Sivertson.
Jeremy Bernfeld is our web producer. Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again next week for more Radio Boston.